Bandwidth for this podcast is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is the iPhone Alley Podcast, episode 42 for May 25th, 2009, talking about the Yeti. This episode is sponsored by Audible. For your free audiobook, go to audiblepodcast.com/iPhone. All right, well, it's time for the iPhone Alley Podcast. I'm Michael Johnston, and we are here to talk about the iPhone, iPod Touch, iTunes, all that fantastic stuff. Probably Jeff's cats, or, you know, maybe that was last episode. Whatever. We are here with, of course, Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, it's always great to be here, so thanks for having me back on again.
Always. We love having you on, even if you're... You know, a little, if you're drinking something. And we should really introduce the fact that we are all, I think, drinking. And we've been doing that for the past couple episodes, in case you couldn't tell. Jeff, what are you drinking?
I'm drinking Maker's Mark Neat. Although I don't have a really nice tumbler because, well, they're in the dishwasher. So I'm drinking out of a yellow coffee mug tonight.
That's fine. It's a way to do it. Adam Christensen's here from the MacCast. Hey, Adam.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing all right.
And what are you drinking?
Oh, that question, huh? Uh-huh. I have a Mission Street India Pale Ale.
Fancy. Is it different because it's from Mission Street?
I have no idea. I think it's this is like the house brand for
Trader Joe's.
Trader Joe's. It's maybe not. It's brewed in Paso Robles, which is not far from where I went to college, so hey.
Cool. And Mr. Ken Ray joins us from the macOS Ken podcast. Hey, Ken, how you doing?
You'll let me know when we're starting, right?
Yeah, I will.
Okay, thanks. I appreciate it. I'm doing okay. How are you?
Good. Did I just kind of jump the gun?
I had no idea. I thought we were still good. I thought we were going to keep, you know, just sort of jawing, as they say.
We have this fantastic pre-show that we do where we just kind of talk about crap, and then eventually the iPhone starts coming into that discussion, and I always wish that I had introduced the show, so I just, as soon as there was a silent moment, I started the show.
Okay. Yeah. Well, thanks.
MacOSKen.com, and what are you drinking?
MacOSKen.com tonight is drinking a Jack Daniels on the rocks.
Awesome. And I've got a Bass. So... let's get into it. According to John Gruber, the next iPhone is going to have a beefier 600 megahertz CPU, double the RAM and more storage, as we've heard in the past with other rumors. And I guess the most significant thing about what Mr. Gruber has said is the CPU is not only going to be just 600 megahertz, a 200 megahertz jump in speed, but it's going to be much more beefy than we would assume from that kind of speed increase, because it's a different type of processor architecture. Does anybody want to chime in on how they feel about what the next processor? Adam, I think you might.
You know, it's funny. I saw the story listed and read a little bit through it, and it seems, I think you even almost allude to it in the posting on the iPhone Alley site, that it seems more the same we've been hearing. I mean, I've been hearing that number 600 megahertz processor. Mm-hmm. I would assume it to be a next generation chip. I mean, not to diss John Gruber. I think John Gruber's great, and I love his stuff, but I wasn't really taken back by this at all or surprised by it. It just seems like more of the same. And, you know, I feel we're going to know in a couple of weeks what this thing is and get all the full specs. But sure, I mean, needs to be faster, more RAM, more storage, you know, 16 and 32 gigs, better graphics processor, I think, is going to be in there. Just all the stuff we've been talking about for the last few months.
Yeah, so I'm trying to look up what Arnold Kim posted on Mac Rumors. A certain new ARM processor, I think it was. Do anybody happen to remember what it was called?
The Cortex ARM version 7?
Yeah, the Terminator chip, I think it is.
Okay.
Yeah, the one that they use in the T-800. Who saw the movie? I'm going to derail this right away.
Don't talk about the movie.
No. Well, did anybody see it?
Somebody must have, but I haven't.
I saw it. It was good.
I think I'm going tomorrow. I'm not sure.
I Twittered a spoiler.
Nice.
And then I said, oops, it's a spoiler. But it wasn't really a spoiler. It was something that led people to believe. If anybody follows my Twitter stream, I have a habit starting with Star Trek about Twittering, you know, a la what was the movie? What was the one with the smiley face I'm thinking of and all the
Watchmen.
Watchmen. How did I not remember the name of that? But anyway.
Oh, I just shed a tear and my heart broke a little because.
I suck at names, Jeff. It's okay.
The
I
one
love
with
them.
The
I
smiley
saw,
face.
I saw it twice. I loved it. It was a masterpiece. But because everyone complains so much about, you know, all
Dr.
the.
Dr. Manhattan's all the, junk.
Exactly. Thank you. I got in the habit of Twittering that, you know, in random movies that there's quite a bit of, you know, wiener action going on in several things. So like Star Trek, and I threw some people off and said, who said that there was, you saw Spock's junk in Star Trek? Because I didn't see it and I was looking for it the entire time. So I like to throw people off. Yeah. And I think there was actually some frontal nudity, I think. Not actual, you know, junk happening in Terminator. So I tweeted about that, and I totally derailed this. What were we talking about? The processor, I think?
Yeah, we were talking about the ARM version 7 Cortex, I think.
Yes, the Terminator processor. So right. I'm not that excited about the processor. Of course, you know, a jump in speed is going to be incredibly significant. Like, you know, John Gruber points out that it's going to be the difference, kind of like, you know, the difference between a 486 and a Pentium class processor, which is going to be fantastic. But I'm still a little more excited about double the RAM, because I think that's one of the huge constraints with the iPhone applications right now. And as far as I know, and Adam, you might be able to clear this up because I assume you know how the programming works on the iPhone, but do developers have to release their own RAM when they quit, or is that something done by the OS?
You assume wrong. I've done no iPhone development. I've toyed around with a couple books and gone through about a Hello World app, and I really wouldn't know. But I mean, most, if I were to assume, I mean, it's based on Cocoa, so most modern languages are going to handle garbage collection and memory cleanup and things like that. So I would assume it would be the same on the iPhone.
So that the OS takes care of that?
Typically, I think it depends on how you write the program as well. So
I'm not sure. For some reason, I thought I heard that, and it kind of makes sense, because I look at the iStat application on my iPhone, and so it lets me see how much RAM I'm using up, and that's one of those silly things that I'm completely obsessed with on my phone and on my Mac. And I noticed that, you know, when things get sluggish, oftentimes I'm very low on free memory. So right now I'm actually at 2 megabytes, and you can hit a free memory button and it'll free it up and sometimes crash my phone. So that's nice.
Wait, let me back up for a second, because if you're talking about the Mac Rumors piece that was about the ARM V7 Cortex last week, the thing yes. that they kept concentrating on was the fact that it's going to improve real-time performance on mobile devices on multimedia processing. So they're saying that this is actually going to be key to a lot of the video handling and editing and publishing that we've heard so much about.
Aha.
And that it's going to be key, just basically in handling a lot of the multimedia functions that are already really cool on the iPhone, but they can apparently be as much as 400 times accelerated.
So do you know if that processor has a hardware encoder for encoding, I assume, H.264 video?
No, sir, I do not.
Okay. I assume something like that would be in there. If they're talking about, you know, accelerated for, you know, media and that sort of thing. And especially in a mobile device where processing power is, you know, very scarce. You'd need something that's like a hardware encoder for doing that, so it can be done natively on the chip instead of done in software. So that would make sense why we wouldn't see the video recording on the 3G in the original iPhone and just on this new one.
Well, it would and it wouldn't.
It would and wouldn't make sense.
It wouldn't make sense. I mean, I've kvetched about this in the past, but in 2005, I had a Motorola that could record video, and yeah, it was crappy and choppy, and you know, not the clearest thing in the world, but it could do it.
That's true.
And I mean, all of Oakland, California, was turned upside down around New Year's Day because of a shooting, and somebody got some of the worst video in the world of cops shooting this guy. I mean, the ability to record, and I understand, even if it doesn't measure up to Apple's specifications, when every other phone on the planet can do it, or when most of them can, it seems like they should have gone ahead and done it with the very first iPhone, I think, and with the iPhone 3G. And then you go ahead and make it better. I mean, otherwise you just, you know, you get lapped on some things, I think.
This is true. But we've seen that with a lot of things, with copy and paste and surely, you know, third-party development and all that kind of stuff. It wasn't in there at 1.0. So I guess, for some reasons, Apple, of course, wants to just, promote the upgrade. So if that model has the video recording and the other one doesn't, and it's not, that shady, I think, because, if the one is explicitly designed for media encoding and the other one obviously isn't, then it's not that big of a deal.
No, I'm not saying it's shady. I'm just saying I don't understand. I mean, it's cool that it's going to be, I'm assuming that it happens, which, of course, I mean, is not necessarily a safe assumption, but assuming that it happens, it's great that it's going to be so much better than it could have been, but we could have had it to compare it with as well. I mean, at this point, they could just point out the sort of cruddy, grainy video that everybody else has, and iPhone buyers would be excited because the iPhone's never had it before. So, I mean, it'll be fantastic if it's wonderful, but it would have been good to have it the whole time. I'm not complaining that much. It just, it doesn't make sense to me that it hasn't been there the whole time.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a lot about the iPhone that doesn't make sense, even though it's a very cool product. And if you look at the other features that are missing, the copy and paste that isn't there, how about being able to sync notes? And how about having a to-do application that's actually built in, like every Palm has had since the original Palm Pilot?
Yeah, well, that's Apple, and I don't think it's supposed to make sense, right? Not complete sense. It's Steve Jobs.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, what that tells me is that the people that are making the decisions about what needs to be on the iPhone, at least up to this point, have been making decisions based on what they need to use.
Yeah, and I guess that's how it goes. I mean, the most that you can expect from a product is, if the designers actually use the product, and I think that's the most beneficial thing of all, regardless of the fact that maybe they don't need some of the features. So if you've ever used a product that is just so horrible, you think I'm sure the person who created this doesn't even use the product because there are so many obvious flaws here that they would have figured that out if they actually used it. So I think the iPhone, does benefit from that. And, all Apple products, I think, benefit from that factor at least.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. So do we want to talk about AT&T and the low-cost limited data plans? I think we talked about this last week, and I guess Ralph De La Vega over at AT&T confirmed that they're considering lower cost data plans for people who don't necessarily use a whole bunch of data. I assume that if they do bring something like that out, it won't be the default sort of deal with the iPhone. You'll have to explicitly have it, because otherwise it'll be a little confusing because we have no idea how much data we use month to month on our iPhones. So the unlimited is pretty nice. And I'm going to still stick with maybe this lower cost data plan is minus tethering. And then the 30, so that'd be a $20 kind of thing, and it would be unlimited. And then the 30, would be unlimited plus tethering. So that's what I'm going to throw out there. I don't think we had Adam and Jeff ring in on that. Ken, do you want to mention anything, or do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, it's kind of hard to guess what AT&T is going to do. It would surprise me if we get to keep paying $30 and they add tethering into that.
Right. Well, with AT&T, of course. But with, I mean, that's a move that would make sense with Apple if it was solely their decision. But yeah, we do have AT&T.
So, I mean, I would think that if they do go ahead and introduce a lower cost plan, then that'll be one that would be capped for surfing. And then those of us who want to keep the $30 plan or feel like we need to keep the $30 plan would probably get unlimited data. And then I would think there would be an additional charge on top of that if you wanted tethering.
I'm sure
they'd agree with you on that.
Yeah. In my land of fairies and ponies, the other scenario sounds better, but you're probably right because it is AT&T.
Well, and because, I mean, more and more of what they're doing is relying on data services and on the wireless service. They're going to continue, more than likely going to continue to lose money on the landline side, and they're not going to want to keep losing money. So they'll want to make, they'll probably want to make that up. And it's AT&T. They'll make as much money as they can when they can.
Yeah. Totally. So do we want to talk about the rejection and then approval of eucalyptus? Because we were talking about this right before the show started. and it's very interesting to me to see still these applications that, and we've heard the story before about applications that provide access to content that, you know, may or may not be explicit or something that Apple would want in the App Store, but it's not actually included in the application itself. So this application, an ebook reader called Eucalyptus, was initially rejected by Apple because of, you know, explicit content. And then later on, Apple approved this. So it's just really interesting to see. I guess I got to think that they've got hundreds of people just sitting in front of their computers looking at these applications, trying to figure out whether or not they should be approved. And who wanted to talk about this?
I'll talk about it because okay. it makes me laugh in a lot of ways. And I just have to wonder if Apple sometimes in their training and having to ramp up so quickly, I think, adding on people to review apps because they didn't expect this huge volume of apps coming through, that in the training session, they're forgetting to tell some of these guys that, hey, you know what? You do have the right to use your common sense a little bit and discretion beyond the rules. So I think they're kind of trained on, here are the things that you're supposed to reject. And I think in some cases, when we see things like this, it's like you got the one guy and he's just following the guidebook that said, you know, you see anything that's related to anything that might be sexual or violent or anything, and just blanket reject it. And I think that's what's happening here. It got blanket rejected because it gave you access to content. That content wasn't in the app itself. And I think he just didn't understand that line. You have to think, as we see more and more of this happening, that that's just the kind of thing. I don't think Apple's out there trying to like shut down these apps. I think they're just dealing with a huge volume and having to train a lot of people that are taking into different interpretations of what the guidelines are.
So you're thinking that it's not necessarily an official Apple decision to reject this application. It was just, you know, Jay Random dude who's, you know, one of the approvers who was mistaken in you know, what he rejected. And then
I look at it almost in the same way as you get when you call Apple support. I mean, sometimes you get the guy that's really bright and kind of knows what he's doing, and then you got the other guy that follows the playbook. And I think they've had to train a lot of people, and I think there's different levels that they probably go through. They probably have like a first screening that's just like, okay, you're the guys that we want you to wipe out all the things that are in the book that says you can't do these things.
Yeah.
And that maybe there's something that like this should have probably gone to a second up the chain thing.
Right.
But probably just he got the form letter sent back and they're just counting on the developers to be smart enough to go, no, that's not right. Let's resubmit this. Here's why. Let me explain why your rejection's wrong. And it sounds like then it went through. So it sounds a little in some ways like the process is probably working. Mm-hmm. And there's a little bit of the press jumping now on every little app that gets rejected and kind of making a story out of it.
Well, sure. We only have really at this point rumors about the next gen iPhone, and I think we've already gotten all the details in, and so it's that and, you know, whatever else we can pick up on.
Sure.
I gotta say, I would love to think that there was a second level that this stuff gets kicked up to, but there was a. Does anybody remember what the app was that the guy basically said that there's a big security flaw in the App Store and it's an Easter egg? So, like, if you don't have any objectionable content, you can go ahead and get your app just to sail straight through. But you can put an Easter egg in that would allow people to see violent film clips, pornography, potentially, according to this guy, although he's kind of guessing, I think, on this part. But he's saying potentially malicious code as well.
Uh-huh.
To me, the most interesting part, I mean, first of all, that's kind of interesting and kind of funny. That you could actually, I mean, I don't know why it hasn't occurred to more people, or if it has, why we haven't heard more about it, that Easter eggs could do it, because we know that the approval process is a little hinky. But he also, I can't remember what the deal was with his app. Oh, it was the lyrics app, right? So he could actually see what was happening with the application because of the weblog that was generated.
Oh, right.
And what he found was that one employee at Apple opened it up, looked at it, made sure it didn't crash, and then rejected it.
Huh.
And then when it was approved the second time after he put in the profanity filter, one employee opened it up, looked at it, found no profanity and approved it.
Huh.
Right. And he had the Easter egg that would allow you to then turn it back on, right? There was some sort of combination you could plug in there and the filter turned off.
To me, what was equally interesting, though, was not only is there the Easter egg, but the fact that he was able to sort of look in and see, hey, it doesn't look like there's more than one guy checking this out and deciding.
So what you're saying is that it's not necessarily they're allowing Easter eggs in application. They're in applications. They're just not seeing this stuff that shouldn't be there because it is an Easter egg and they don't thoroughly check through the app.
Well, that's what that's what this guy said in the article. I mean, that's what his app sort of more or less proved. But that's not Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, I 100% agree with that. I think it is one person looking through it and they're having to do it quickly and they're looking for specific bullet points. And they probably just have the developer saying, okay, this is what the app does. And you could easily hide something in there. And I think by that same token, that's why we see things that slip through, get found out about, and then get pulled back as well. I wasn't meaning to imply that there was the second level. I was kind of with you, Ken. I was saying there should be this.
Oh, yeah.
The second level that gets kicked up. Like, if an app is questionable or if there's an edge case, it should get kicked up. I think literally what's happening is, and it's at the discretion of that one guy opening the app, he's making a judgment call. And I think you got some guys that are smart and going, okay, let's use common sense. This is not profanity in the app. This or, you know, content that's violating in the app. This is the user has to go out and actually download, you know, an adult book to this book reader. This thing is just a book reader and it's functioning as a book reader. You have the other guy that's going, well, it gives you access to profanity or it gives you, you know, access to profane lyrics. That violates the thing. I'm gonna ding it and kick it back to the developer.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that tells us which guy was the one that approved the Kindle app.
Okay.
It was
because
the other
you can
guy,
get at Naughty Books with the Kindle app.
Yep.
Actually, though, the Kindle app's a little bit different because you can't get Naughty Books through the Kindle app.
That is true.
That's different than Stanza and, as I understand it, although I haven't seen it yet, Eucalyptus. I mean, with Stanza, I can go in and I can search for, you know, whatever. Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, the novel. And, you know, and I can actually download it through my application. Whereas with Kindle, you can say, oh, I'd like to buy more books. And what it immediately does is closes down the app and kicks you over to Safari.
Which is totally bogus, and they need to change that, and I'm sure they're aware of it, but yeah.
Well, they probably will now they bought that. What was that other company that they bought? No, it was Stanza.
Yeah, they bought Stanza.
They bought Stanza, and Stanza knows how to do that. Why Amazon hadn't up to this point. I would imagine that'll be coming at some point, though.
I'm sure using the...
Sense.
Although maybe not, because if they do purchases through the application, Apple gets 30% of that.
Well, I don't think they're required to use that system that Apple has set up. I think it's just a convenience thing. I think they can do their own setup however they want to.
Right. I mean, my immediate thought, though, was that Apple would... I'm sorry. My immediate thought was that Amazon would add that, but if it is actually part of the app process, that Apple would get a piece of the sale that was done through it.
Then they definitely wouldn't.
Right.
Then they definitely wouldn't. Plus, the Kindle app is a free app, so they can't do sales through that anyway.
True.
I think they're going to go the other way, actually, if we're specifically talking about the Kindle app, because you guys know they just redid the, or they have now a UI design, so it'll recognize the iPhone, the Amazon Kindle store, the online store.
Oh, yeah.
So if you're in the Kindle app and go over, click over, they just let you use the web app, and then that syncs back to the Kindle application, and that way they bypass. I think they specifically did that knowing that they're going to want to sell books directly, and they don't want to do it through Apple's built-in APIs because they will have to give Apple a cut.
Right.
That's interesting.
So speaking of the Easter egg stuff, I wrote up a tip on the site on iPhone Alley about enabling emoji back when there were applications that allowed you to do that. And then at some point, Apple gave an ultimatum to these guys and said, you got to pull that code out of your application and submit the application within this amount of time. Well, guys in the forum have repeatedly been checking out the, I think it's the spell number application, and it turns out that the secret code that you enter in to get emoji has just simply changed, and that's just on their on the developer's blog, you know, what that is. And so it's still there. You can still enable emoji using at least spell number. And this is, May 23rd, so yesterday. You know, that the last guy did this.
All right. So essentially what he did was take the code, the Easter egg code out of his description on the Apple website.
Essentially, and then change the number.
Change the number and then just put it on his blog instead. So you have to go look a little bit farther to find that special code.
Yeah. So if you if you hit iPhoneAlley.com, go to the tips section and go for enable Japanese emoji icons. Look in the comments. The second to last one has the number in there. And so you can get, I think Spell Number is not a free application, is it? I don't remember. It's fairly cheap. I think it's like 99 cents. So if you want emoji and you still haven't done that and you want to send smiley poop, then.
can I do a quick rat hole on that one? Does anybody here know why do they want to restrict emoji to just Japan? Like, what's the big deal? Like, why is this a feature that has to be like hacked in, enabled, whatever, when you're outside of
I think Japan. It's licensing, because the actual emoji icon set is owned by one of the companies in Japan, one of the cell companies.
That makes sense.
And I think that's what it's all about. Even though Apple isn't saying that, they're just saying, look, you gotta disable the feature.
Are you sure about that? Is it something you've actually heard, or are you just speculating?
That sounds familiar to me.
Yeah,
I've been doing a little bit of research, and the recurring theme that comes up is that there's the one company, and I'm sorry, I can't remember which company it is off the top of my head, but there's one company that actually owns that specific emoji icon set that everyone wants to use, and they also own the number codes that correspond to each image, so that everything maps out correctly.
Right. I see. Okay, so I'm guessing that I'm looking at the smiley faces, and those look like Apple design smiley faces. But I'm guessing that the rest of it, the artwork, looks a little different stylistically. So what you're saying sounds accurate.
You know, there's three letters to tell that company about, and it's GIF. Mm-hmm. They can just look at what happened to GIF when they started demanding licensing and stuff like that. And it's just, that's not a path I think you're going to want to really go down.
Yeah, the difference in this case would be, and now I am jumping into the realm of speculation, I have a feeling that the company that owns the emoji icon set has been imposing licensing since day one, whereas CompuServe totally let GIF run rampant across the internet and then later on said, hey, we want licensing fees.
Yeah,
yeah. But I mean, it sounds like they're locking up some specific IDs, but the thing is now that the kind of cat's out of the bag and everybody wants this, it was kind of restricted. I can see how that they had that in Japan, right? And maybe they had the licensing and they have it on all phones and everybody in Japan wants it to be the same, you know, and match up. But if everybody outside of Japan can't have it, how hard is it really for someone to come up with a new icon set and a new set of, you know, and have it be open and say, all right, everybody outside Japan, you use these icons instead. And which set of icons do you think is going to win ultimately?
I think that needs to happen.
I'm okay with that. I'd love to see an emoji-con battle just simply because I want to see it.
So much news coverage. So many so many Gizmodo jokes, I'm thinking. That'd be good stuff. Good times. Okay.
It would be the silliest tech battle ever. And yeah, I see it.
Yeah, who has the best smiley poop?
Exactly. I'm going to say that Apple designed that smiley poop.
No way.
No? I think they did. Apple branded poo. If not, I mean, it'd be very shiny, whatever they do.
You know, I'm going to disagree with you. That is not Apple branded poo. And I say this because if it was Apple branded poo, Greenpeace would have already dissected it and come back and told us whether or not it was organic. And if it's not, they would have complained about Apple's non-healthy poo.
I'm always worried about that happening to mine. You know, Greenpeace coming by, checking out iPhone Alley poo.
Oh, they already sent me the press release on that. And
it's not good.
Fiber. Yeah, you need more fiber.
See, I said rat hole, and this has become something completely different. So let's,
well, with
let's
me,
jump
I,
back.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Let's see. iPhone 32 gigabyte briefly advertised on T-Mobile Austria site. That's really the entire thing. It was briefly on the T-Mobile site in Austria, 32 gigabyte iPhone, and then pulled away.
Free with a contract. Well, not free, but not paid with a contract, with a 2-year contract. Same as what I think what they're already doing with the 8 gig and the 16 gig. Gotcha. That was the only other bit of information there, though.
Okay. Yeah. So I think we've already heard about 32 gigabytes, and I think we're all in agreement that we're going to see 32 gig. Nothing larger, I assume. What do you guys think? Anything larger?
I don't think so. I don't think the chip density is there yet.
Yeah. I think we're going up incrementally like this just because it's Apple's kind of following the technology as it develops. I think 32 gigs is a healthy size right now with the current technology.
Right, and you have to keep in mind that the iPhone has a single memory spot, whereas the iPod Touch can have two memory slots.
Okay, so you think we might see like a 64 gig iPod Touch?
There's no reason why we couldn't.
Yeah, that'd be nice. I would be very jealous of them, but then again, you know, I'll be very comfortable with my 32 gigs for a while.
So yeah, I'd be okay
as long as I don't load up all my applications. I did that a while ago, and I, you know, it's very tough on the Springboard. It actually slows stuff down, believe it or not. You know, people say, you know, how many applications do you have on your Mac? You know, if your computer's acting slow, and it actually having tons and tons of icons on your Springboard on your iPhone does in fact slow it down because it's consuming memory, I think. But I think we're getting more pages, right? We talked about that. Up to, was it 11 pages or more? I don't remember. Who cares?
What's the URL for what was it, 87 apps? Or I never remember that URL. They got the new one.
148 apps. It's 148apps.com, but I can't remember what the new one is. But yeah, they did grab it right away.
I don't know. But lots more apps. So that'll be good for people who are crazy, like me, with the applications. Kindle got an update. You can tell that we don't have a lot to talk about because we're talking about poop with smiley faces. But the
are you referring to the Kindle?
The Kindle iPhone app.
Go back to the other thing. Did you guys see the story about? If you want to talk about the whole 32 gig iPhone, did you see the thing? Bright Point has told Vodafone Australia. This is all just rumor, but somebody sent an email to somebody, and somebody else trusts the person who sent the email. Bright Hand is saying that the 16 gigabyte iPhone is at end of life.
Oh, really?
Right. Yeah.
Did you see this?
I did see that.
Okay. Well, then never mind.
Not the 8 gigabyte.
Not the 8 gigabyte. Right. That's the weird thing.
Oh, that is weird.
So, I mean, is the whole thing just made up? I mean, what's the deal? Unless that's going to be how they do the value play with people.
That's what I'm wondering.
Can they now make the 8 gigabyte model so inexpensively that it becomes the $99 phone? Because I know we were just talking about... No, Adam, you were saying you have a tremendous amount of respect for John Gruber. I cannot buy from anybody that there is going to be a smaller than an iPhone at some point.
Right, yeah.
And he is saying that he is seeing that coming at some point. I think he referred to it as the iPhone Mini.
Really? I thought in his latest post, in the summary at the bottom, you know, mm-hmm. on what he would bet on at WWDC.
At WWDC. He said he doesn't see it coming in July, but he does expect Apple to move on it soon.
Okay. I don't see
which I just can't. I mean, and maybe they will, but it's so hard to imagine.
Well, just simply looking at, you know, what the developers they're developing for a specific screen size. So it'd be so difficult to, I mean,
unless it's going to be something that is not an internet device, unless it's the iPod and what are the three things that Steve Jobs said?
iPod,
a web enabled device. It wouldn't be a web enabled device anymore, or it wouldn't be an internet device anymore.
Internet.
So it'd just be an iPod and a phone.
Yeah.
Yep. I'm not buying it.
I'm not either.
Well, you haven't even seen it yet. Maybe you'll want to.
Well, I just agree with Jeff whenever he says something.
But so then that's the question. If you can't make an iPhone, I mean, because obviously if you go 16 and 32, mm-hmm. you can't make the 16 $99.
Right, yeah.
You can't start giving buy one, get one free the way Verizon did with a BlackBerry, not if you actually want to, you know, maintain your profit margin. Can they now I mean, have they got it down enough? I don't even know how you would. I don't even know how you would figure this out.
So are you saying
that they would figure this out? But have they got it down enough now that they can go ahead and keep the 8 gigabyte and make it a lower cost? But then, just like when there was the 4 gig and the 8 gig, the one that everybody's really going to want, and it's not going to be that much more expensive, would be the 32 gigabyte.
So you're saying
that's the only way that killing the 16 and not the 8 makes any sense.
So the 8 would be, it would remain an iPhone 3G, right? That's what you're saying? Okay. Because I don't think that if they're going for this, you know, newer model with all the new features, I don't think having just simply a smaller amount of memory, or is it significant, a significant amount of money that, you know, it would knock $100 down?
I have no idea.
For the memory alone, I'm saying.
I have to chime in on this because I think way back when, and this was probably before the 3G came out, and I don't remember where I talked about this. I said it on a couple different places. I might have even said it on this show. I had said it, basically that, Ken, that I always had this theory that when Apple got to the free iPhone, at that time I think I was saying that Apple would keep the 8 gig first gen around and have that be the free phone, and then you could get the 3G phone, you know, at the standard pricing that it was going to be at. And I felt that, you know, the first generation iPhone at that time was good enough for most people and could be the value phone. And, right, you know, so this rumor, kind of what you're saying now, makes sense to me that they would keep now the 8 gig 3G, keep it with the same specs, the same, you know, processor, the same camera, the same everything. Those component costs have come down over the course of a year. Those component costs come down significantly. So it would not surprise me if you keep that online. Nothing changes with that device. You know, kind of in the way they did with the MacBook. You know, they bumped the processor a little bit on the MacBook, but you still have that white MacBook. That's their value. That's their value play. It's the older design. You know, everybody knows it's the older design, but you get in there at a really cheap price. So they could subsidize those 8 gigs, you know, basically to free. Let AT&T and the other carriers give those away, and then have the new, hey, if you want the new one, with the new processor and the new camera and the new features, yeah, you got to pay a little bit, but now we have a free option. And I think for a large majority of consumers, that phone is still, it's only a year old. I mean, that is still a really good device. And I have a feeling you're going to have a lot of people that have 3Gs that are going to, you know, skip a generation because they're happy with their phone, much in the way that, say, someone like I did with my first gen iPhone. It was good enough for me. There wasn't enough in the 3G to make me want to jump up, but certainly this time around, I'm definitely going to get the new phone. So I'm kind of on a 2-year upgrade cycle, and I think there's a lot of people like that. But then you have that whole batch of people that are just waiting to get an iPhone, and they want it to be free. And I think a 3G for those people would be, you know, in its current config, would be awesome.
Yeah, and I think that having it be 8 gigabytes is a really, that's something consumers can wrap their head around. Maybe not necessarily the processor speed or the compass or those kind of features that we really enjoy, but the fact that it's, you know, a difference in storage, like a drastic difference in storage, that, you know, really makes sense.
Well, and it solves the app problem too, because all of the current apps run on the current screen size and phone. So
right,
yeah. I'm with you, Ken. I mean, a smaller form factor device never made sense to me, because at the very least, if it's a smaller screen, it's still going to have to be at the same pixel resolution, and it's still going to have similar style controls for most of the applications to continue to work without developers having to build a whole nother set of apps or sort of have two versions of their app for the device. So it's an easier transition for developers too, and I don't think they want to be stirring up the developer pot and fragmenting those guys right now. I mean, they're just getting to the point where developers are really happy with, you know, beyond the app approval process, but happy with the development tools and things that they have.
Yeah, it seems to me the only way you can make a smaller iPhone is if you, for all intents and purposes, take apps out of the equation. If you just make it like a super, you know, phoning thing, and maybe it'll still have a camera and it would definitely act as an iPod.
Right.
Although it probably would. I mean, maybe it would be like the difference between the iPod Touch and, you know, the Nano or something like that. So maybe you could still watch movies on it, but you'd have to sync it with your computer. Well, you know, it'd be like, I don't know. Other thing, though. I mean, while I put that out there and say that whole thing about what Brightpoint supposedly said to Vodafone, and then somebody sent it to somebody else, in the Best Buy, this is all rumor. Why don't we just talk about the Yeti? Why don't we just talk about the abominable snowman for 2 weeks? Because seriously, the rumor out of Best Buy, which somebody has emailed me and said that they've actually seen the screen where this happens, where you've got Charlie 1, Charlie 2, and Charlie 3 under the Charlie Project. They're all designations supposedly for a new iPhone. That's three different iPhones. Would that be two 32 gigabytes, one black and one white, and then a 16 gigabyte that was black? Or would they actually change the inventory for the 8 gig to something else if they're going to be giving it away for free? Probably they would, but there are just so many rumors right now. It kind of makes your head hurt sometimes.
Yes, it does.
I didn't mean to stop everything. I'm sorry.
No, that's fine.
I'm going to jump back into the middle of what you were saying a minute ago about maybe if in this magical pony and puppy dog world where we know what rumors are real and which ones aren't, Apple making a smaller version of an iPhone and then maybe not having it work with the apps so we could account for different screen sizes. That's something I don't see happening simply because the App Store is generating a lot of money, and why in the world would Apple make a version of the iPhone that doesn't take advantage of that App Store?
Right. No, I don't disagree. The only reason I even bring it up as a possibility is because people keep saying that they see a smaller form factor iPhone. I mean, go back to what Tim Cook said on the last quarterly conference call. We're not looking to make the most phones. We're looking to make the best phones. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can't say that this is – I mean, you might be able to argue with the Palm Pre if you want to. You might be able to argue with the Windows Mobile things if you happen to have been born in Redmond, that there are better phones out there. But I don't think you can argue that the best phone is one that has less than what the iPhone has currently. Maybe it does a lot of the iPhone stuff differently, but I don't think you can say, oh yeah, if we just pull the screen off that puppy and make it only a phone and an iPod, then you've got the best phone.
Yeah. I would say, you know, my typical filter for most of this stuff, I mean, it's easy to get overwhelmed by all these rumors and things like that, but my typical filter is the one Apple is about making money. So I usually say, in my own mind, where's the business case for this? Where does Apple come out with a good profit margin on this deal? And usually that's the way we see them go.
Yeah. Good point, that.
Okay. Do we want to talk about the Kindle? The Kindle for iPhone, I should say. Yeah, let's talk about the Kindle.
The smiling poo?
Can we talk about the smiling poo?
Wait, didn't we already do that?
That's what we were talking about with the Kindle. I'm sorry. That was the joke about 20 minutes ago. Oh, My apologies.
I'm sorry. It was funny.
Oh, yeah.
Didn't make me laugh, but, you know, it was funny.
But inside, oh, you're busting the gut.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. So the Kindle for iPhone thing, I think, Jeff, you use that, I assume. I tried it for a little bit, and I was really cool. I really enjoyed it, and then I, you know, find other things to do. But so it got, it's updated to 1.1, and it adds landscape viewing, multi-touch zooming, and more. Jeff, do you want to talk about it, or do you care?
You know, I do care, but I have not played with the new version because I keep going back to the real Kindle.
And oh, yeah, you have one of those.
Yeah, it's a first-generation Kindle. And I keep going back to that because unless I'm doing something wrong, there's no way to synchronize your magazine subscriptions that you have on your real Kindle to your iPhone.
I do not.
No, you're not doing anything wrong.
You can't.
Okay.
You can't do it.
And that's what stopped me from messing with the Kindle app. Because what I really want to do when I'm out and about is catch up on the magazine articles from the subscriptions that I have.
You don't want to play iCopter?
I don't want to play what?
iCopter.
Okay, that's different. When I'm reading.
When you're doing something with your mind.
When I'm doing something with my mind, with the Kindle app, what I want to be able to do is look at the magazine subscriptions.
Right.
And I can't. So I let it update on my iPhone, and I thought, oh, great, they added in some neat things, and I'm still not going to use it because I can't get magazines.
Yeah, it's the same thing with newspapers. If you have a subscription to the New York Times, which is kind of wacky, I think it was a I think it was Michael Gartenberg I was talking to a couple of weeks ago for Day Six. He was you know, talking about whether or not that was going to save the newspaper industry and all that. And then we started talking a little bit about the new Kindle. And then we started talking a little bit about the Kindle for the iPhone as well. And he was like, why doesn't the app do everything that the Kindle does just on a smaller screen? Why can't I give them money to read the New York Times on my iPhone, but I can read it for free?
I think it's just a matter of them. I think they put the application out when it was pretty much working, but they didn't have all the features in there, such as actually getting more content, you know, right from within the application.
I think they did it on purpose, and I don't know why yet, because it doesn't make sense.
Okay.
Only thing I can think of would be ad revenue. I mean, if the New York Times wants to be able to do whatever it wants to with ads with its app.
Okay, I could see that. But if they're letting it go to the regular Kindle, what's the deal with the difference? Or what would be the difference between pushing their ads out to the Kindle or pushing their ads out to the Kindle app?
Right.
Well, I wasn't talking about the Kindle app, though. I mean, the New York Times. I mean, I'm not saying it's the New York Times that's deciding to keep itself off the Kindle app. Maybe that is an Amazon thing. But if the New York Times is deciding, like if they had their choice and they said, no, we don't want to be on the Kindle app because we'll make a bigger splash on our own app and we can actually sell our ads that way.
Okay, that makes sense.
Maybe. Who knows?
Yeah, it's messed up. And my Jedi instincts are telling me that it's Amazon that's doing this, and it's their decision, and it doesn't have anything to do with the rest of the publishers that they deal with. And if I'm wrong, anyone at Amazon is more than welcome to let me know.
I'm going to throw this out there just as a harebrained idea, because as you're talking about it, the only thing I can think of, and I don't know why this would make a dang bit of difference, but I do know that the Kindle, right, comes with that, the Verizon wireless thing, right?
I thought it was a Sprint.
Yeah.
Well, whatever. It has like Wi-Fi built into it, and you pay for that up front, and Amazon passes that on to some sort of carrier.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Right. Right. Some sort of carrier agreement. And books, you know, you're going to download once or it's going to sync once, and that's kind of it. The subscriptions are going to be happening more frequently. Could there be anything around the bandwidth or the distribution being different between subscriptions like magazines and newspapers versus just books in the eyes of Amazon or AT&T or anybody else?
Well, that actually seems to me like it would be a better argument for putting it on the iPhone and not on the Kindle itself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unless I'm missing something.
Yeah, I just don't know. I have no idea how that business model works if they want to, you know, keep it on their network. Because I was thinking more like AT&T maybe saying, you know, because we've known they've shut down pieces or tried to shut down pieces in applications before, a la, you know, 3G connectivity with the Slingbox app. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, I don't know.
I have no answer for that.
It hit my mind as just something. I mean, there's a lot of things at play, I guess, when it comes to the Kindle and the Kindle app and the way content is being pushed around.
I think there's a lot of things going on with the iPhone in general. It's quite a headache for stuff that's, you know, data related. You're going with AT&T and Apple. You know, you got Apple with the approval process, and then I guess there's AT&T in there too with the, you know, I wonder how that comes into play with the approval process with applications that use, you know, so much bandwidth or have the potential to. I wonder, you know, if there is this one guy, you know, who looks at an application, I wonder how he decides, okay, I need to pass this along to someone to check with AT&T on this one.
My guess is that he doesn't have to, and that there's this little chart that they look at, and they go down and okay, it's using this much bandwidth, it's below the threshold, pass, it's above the threshold, fail. And this guy, we'll call him Vinny. So Vinny, the application approval guy, is just going down that chart.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so I don't think there's anyone that Vinny actually has to go and ask, hey, is this bandwidth usage level okay? Because it's just right there in front of him.
We need to get Vinny on the show.
I was actually just thinking Vinny would be a great character on any one of our shows.
<That'd be> great. Yeah, there's just a tree. I mean, Jeff's got it right. There's just a tree these guys go down and they go, okay, what kind of app is it? Okay, it's this kind of app. Okay, what is it doing next? It does this. Oh, is it doing video? Okay, it does video. Okay, here, what's the bandwidth usage and what? How is the video, you know, being distributed? Is it streaming? Is it local? You know, I'm sure there's just this branch tree that they go down. Like I said, just like you would get when you called Apple support, you know, they have their little script they follow and it's like, oh, if they answer this way to this question, go to this mm-hmm. step and now follow this branch.
I think they have a choose your own adventure application on the phone that they that they use to approve the apps.
I wonder who approved that application.
Vinny!
All right, with that, I think we should go to our iPhone picks. But before we do that, I'd like to mention our sponsor for this month, Audible, at audiblepodcast.com/iPhone. They have over 60,000 titles are professionally read, and they play in iTunes, on your iPod, and of course on your iPhone. And they've, of course, got tons and tons of books. They've got speeches and other interesting audio formatted presentations for you on Audible. I love Audible because I get to do, you know, something with my mind while I'm in the car, or if I decide I'm not going to listen to some house music when I'm, you know, jogging or something like that. I'll listen to some, either a podcast or an audiobook. So if you, you know, enjoy podcasts, Audible seems to be a great fit. You want to get some books read. And so if you join with the audiblepodcast.com/iPhone link, you get a free trial, free 14-day trial to Audible Listener Gold, which includes one credit to a book. And Jeff has a recommendation for us this week.
You know, one of these days you're going to decide you don't want my recommendations anymore, and I can't wait to see which book that is. The book that I came up for you this week is The Basketball Diaries by Jim Carroll.
Okay, let's hear about it.
All right, so the gist of it is it's kind of a coming-of-age story about a teenage boy growing up on the streets of New York and how he becomes who he is by dealing with all the horrible things that are going on in his world. And Michael, it also, for you, includes sex and drugs.
Oh, good. I don't read anything without that, so...
There you go.
Yeah.
And it's a fantastic book. And
what's it called?
The Basketball Diaries, and it's by Jim Carroll. And what makes the Audible.com or the Audible version of Basketball Diaries even cooler is that Jim Carroll is reading it.
Oh, it's always nice when the author reads it. Does he have a good reading voice?
Oh yeah. And he sucks you right in. And, you know, and it's his own story.
Right.
So he adds so much more to it when he's reading it, and it's very cool. And I know you will appreciate it. There you go. Just go get it. And Vinny should download it too.
Yeah. Vinny, we should include Vinny in a lot of our discussions. It's one credit, I assume. I'm checking right now. Yes, it is one credit. So you can get that with your free credit if you sign up with the audiblepodcast.com/iPhone link, or you can get another book. I wanted to mention, because you said, you know, that the author reads it, the John Hodgman book, The Areas of My Expertise, fantastic book, totally worth whatever I guess it was a credit. I would have paid, you know, actual real money. I guess I did with the Audible subscription, but it was so good. And especially my favorite part is at the very end, when, it's, 700 hobo nicknames that he lists, and it was in one take. I asked Jonathan Colton at the new media thing, and he said it was one take, and he accompanied John Hodgman as he read that. So that's The Areas of My Expertise by John Hodgman, if you want to go for the comedy. I always, for whatever reason, this is a trend now that I'm recommending books against your recommendations, Jeff. But it's not against, it's along with. So if you're looking for, you know, the intelligent, it seems, book, it's got a very, you know, the guy on the cover looks like he's thinking very deeply about something.
No, he's stoned.
Oh. Okay. Well, maybe he is thinking deeply about something, but he just happens to be stoned.
Okay, well, there you go.
Yeah. Or you can go with, you know, the John Hodgman. So that's it. Audiblepodcast.com/iPhone. And now our real iPhone picks. Jeff, would you like to start us off?
Sure. And hold on. I wrote down what it was. As oh, what the font?
I thought I might have to throw out a bleep sound.
No, but you can. That. You're totally welcome to. But what the font? And this is an application that lets you use the built-in camera in your iPhone to take photographs of text, and then it uses the magic of the interwebs, and then does its best to identify what that typeface is that you're looking at. And for someone like me that has a background in the graphic design and printing and publishing world, it's a very cool little application.
And it's free?
And it's free.
What?
It can be wonderfully handy.
I have that now. That's fantastic. What the font?
What the font?
Yeah. How well does it work?
You know,
it's got a lot of negative reviews, I have to say.
It has a lot of negative reviews, I'm sure.
From people who don't understand. Maybe they have their finger over the camera when they take the picture.
Well, the problem I've seen is that a lot of people will be taking photographs of type that is pretty crappy to begin with. So it's been produced in a very poor way, so it's hard to accurately identify it. And then maybe it'll be on colors where the type and the background are close enough that it's hard to tell the difference sometimes. Or maybe there's other like drop shadow effects and things that are obscuring from the camera standpoint where the edges of letters might be. So if you don't have good clean text to work with in the beginning, you're probably not going to get good results out of it.
Yeah, and you may. So you've used it, and it's working well so far for you.
Yes, and when I've tried it in situations where you don't have good text to start with, you get some really whacked out results. Right. But on the other hand, you're also going to get exposed to a lot of typefaces that you might not have known were out there to begin with. So if you start with good text and you have a nice clear image, because a lot of people get too close and
yeah,
the iPhone camera lens can't focus when you're really close, and so it's blurry.
Do you have a Griffin Clarify?
I don't.
Those are really cool.
That would probably help a lot. I bet a Griffin Clarify would really improve the performance.
That's the case with the macro lens in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I use it for capturing stuff like receipts and stuff for random collections, whatever that application is. The one with the green icon. Like I said, I suck at names.
Evernote,
yeah. See, you can, you know, that's why I have you guys on. To fill in my knowledge gaps. I think I'm, you know, we're all people who really rely on the internet to, you know, appear intelligent. So, although I can't speak for everybody, I guess, because nobody's agreeing. But yeah, so let's move on. So first of all, what the font is Jeff's pick. Adam, what do you have for us?
Well, I have a question for Jeff. I mean, couldn't that application get about 75% accuracy just by answering Helvetica?
Yes. Yes, it could. And it could probably go up to about 85% if it alternated by throwing in Comic Sans.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, or marker felt.
I had to throw that in. I just watched if anybody hasn't seen it, I might have mentioned it on this show before, but the documentary Helvetica, because I have the Netflix streaming now, mm-hmm. and that's awesome.
Do you have it streaming to a thing that's hooked up to your TV or just to your computer?
To a Mac Mini running Boxy, yeah.
Aha. Uh-huh. So the Boxy on the Apple TV, does that stream the Netflix now?
Yes.
Oh, I got it.
And it's awesome.
I got to hack my Apple TV again. Okay.
Go ahead. on the Apple TV. I don't know on the Apple TV. Sorry. Mac Mini does.
Oh, actually, Boxy does Hulu on Apple TV now.
Yep.
Or again.
Yep.
But that's not my pick.
There you go.
That's not my pick.
No, we can talk about the Apple TV.
You know, the thing about Helvetica, if you have a chance to watch that, do, because it's very interesting, and it'll, if you're not familiar with the graphic design world, it'll really open your eyes to what's going on with all of these things that are being printed and that you're getting to look at all the time, and that you don't even realize are in front of your eyes. It'll also give you a little bit of insight into some of the things that happen in my head, for whatever that's worth.
That sounds good. I think I have it in my Netflix live queue. So whenever I get to that, I'll check it out. I've heard good things.
It's excellent. Can I do my pick now?
Yes, please. Ken's just sitting there. When is it going to be over?
No, I just thought it was funny. He's excited about his pick. You can tell.
Well, a little bit excited. I mean, it's funny because every once in a while I'll just scroll through, and I've kind of slowed down on the number of apps I'm downloading, but I'll scroll through kind of the featured apps, and one that popped up this week that I was curious about because I'm a AAA member is there's a new AAA app. So if you're in the Automobile Club Association of America, AAA, you get this AAA card, and I've always known that, you know, the AAA card gives me great discounts. I usually get them on car rentals and travel and hotels and things like that, but actually, AAA has discounts for like everything, and I've known this like forever, but I always forget. You know, it's not one of those things when you're at a store, you think, oh, show my AAA card. And so what this app does is it uses the location, you fire it up, figures out where you are, and then shows you any place near you that will give you a AAA discount. So specifically, like recently, a few months back, I had to buy a new headlight for my car, and I went to the Pep Boys or Kragen or whatever that was down the street. And when I fired this app up, I found out I could have saved like 7%. I mean, it wasn't a lot. It's the tax. But hey, I could have saved some money had I shown my AAA card, and I had it there in my wallet when I was checking out. And I just missed out on it because I didn't even think about it. So now I think it's going to be great for me, serving as a little reminder of, hey, you can get a discount here with your AAA card. The only thing I'll have to say, there was kind of one negative thing about it. It's a little self-promoting because a couple of the deals are like, hey, if you go to AAA and use their travel services, you can get a discount on your travel. So like if it's a travel agency or something like that, sometimes it's, you know, self-promotional, but, overall, I think it's going to be useful for a lot of people if you're a AAA member.
So it's called, AAA discounts,
something like that. Yeah. I didn't write it down.
It's the official AAA app, right?
Yeah, it was put out by AAA, which is why, you know, again, it's a little self-promotional, but
yeah,
if you're a AAA member, it can come in handy. Like I said, for me, I can see myself, because I always have my iPhone on me, remembering to kind of pop it open and see if I get a discount or not.
And that is also free. And Ken, what do you have for us?
Mine is not free.
Aw, mine isn't either, so we can have a half and half.
A few weeks ago, I started playing with the different doodle apps, or, you know, the different drawing apps that I could find online. And I found a couple of free ones. And it was kind of like, you know, it's like if somebody gave you a great big Sir Marks-a-Lot. I think that's what they're called, or just Marks-a-Lot marker. I mean, there was very little control, very little that you could do to change things. You could change the color and maybe your choice of three widths as far as the pen. And that was it. So I decided I wanted to look for one that wasn't going to break the bank, but that would give me more control. And I found Paintbook, which is now at Paintbook 2.5. And I don't know if anybody's played with it, but to me, it's pretty neat. I mean, I used to do a lot more art kind of stuff than I do now. And I was always afraid. I was one of those guys. I was afraid to, like, you know, I didn't want to get the page dirty. I didn't want to screw it up, which is why I was a horrible artist. I mean, it's like I was so worried about making it perfect that I never made anything. And this kind of takes some of that away because it's got undo, which is super.
Oh, if life had undo, that'd be great.
It wouldn't it? Like if I could start this whole thing over again.
If we could just undo this, the fact that we description. Scheduled this. Yeah.
Just this description would be great. no, they you can actually, you can change the width from, I think, from like a 0.001, like in pen talk, you know, to about 100 millimeters for the stylus. You can also change the opacity of the pen or brush that you're using. So you can go for, you know, sort of a watercolor effect or sort of an ink wash effect if you want to. You can set the parameters of the screen. So it's as small as 1 inch by 1 inch or as big as 200 inches by 200 inches. They're exportable to, you can email them, of course, or they're exportable to PDF. I haven't really, honestly, I haven't played with it nearly as much. It's very powerful.
It looks good.
For something that's like $399 and fits on your iPhone. So that's the one that I've had the most fun with lately.
Cool.
Can I ask
you a
question?
Although I'm still a lousy artist. What's your question, Adam? Go ahead.
I'm curious because I've tried one out and I'm looking at this now and it looks similar to the one that I tried out. And I'm curious if you compared. Did you try brushes as you were going through your?
I did not.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
This looks even better in terms of it looks like it has a great screen, like you said, for selecting your sort of implement. In terms of controlling the size, I like how it has like millimeters, which I can relate to from, you know, like certain graphic pens or pencils and things like that. So that makes a little more sense.
I also like the fact that you've got a bunch of different pens there. So like if I know, okay, well, I'm drawing with this blue pen right now and it's this wide, but I want to draw with a black pen that's a little smaller. It's not like I'm switching from one to the other. I can go to the selector screen and I can go ahead and set the parameters for, well, it looks like, I mean, looking at it now, it looks like 8 or 12 different pens. So I could have just a bunch of different colored pens and a bunch of different colored of different colors and even set different opacities for them as well. And so like, oh, wow, I have to go back and reset this and change the color back here and reset the opacity. No, it's basically like putting one pen down and picking another one up once you've got
really
them set.
Handy. Yeah, that makes it a lot quicker to switch between devices.
Right.
Yeah, the brushes you actually have to, you know, you're continually bringing up the... It's pretty quick to bring up the selector, but you gotta move the sliders back and forth each and every time, and to get the same exact pen, you'd have to kind of remember. So yeah, that's a really nice feature.
Yeah, it's got like 12 different presets, it looks like, and honestly, I've only used I think 2 at one time, but it looks like you've got as many as 12 to do, and it's got a full range of colors as well. It's not like, you know, you have 8 colors from which to choose. It reminds me a lot of the few times that I played around with. The times I played around with Photoshop, you know, where you can basically drag to one point in a huge color wheel. It's got the same kind of color selectors on there as well.
Yeah, brushes had this really nice feature where if you held down, you were in a drawing, you held down on a specific area, it would pop up and let you select that color and switch it right as you were drawing, which was kind of nice. And that
that's
what
pretty
drew
cool.
me to it.
Yeah. That's pretty it. Anyway, that's mine. And it's not
cool.
It's $399, which I think is the second most I've ever spent on an app. The most I ever spent was the first weekend, of course, when we all bought Super Monkey Fun Ball.
Mm-hmm. You didn't.
It's like a
bought...
rite of passage for all of us, wasn't it?
I think it. Well, the first weekend, and it was one of the ones that was mentioned on the stage at the iPhone event in March of 2008. So you kind of had to.
Yeah, of course.
I guess we did. Yeah,
you were obligated as an Apple follower. So my pick is a game called Tokitori. It's $5.99. It just hit the App Store, I think, 2 days ago. I got a chance to play with it as it was being developed by Two Tribes. And if you guys, if anybody's heard of Tokitori for Wii or previous versions, this is actually modeled directly after the Wii version of Tokitori. And essentially, you are a little... you're kind of a chicken, kind of a duck. It's got duck feet, but it's a chicken, a baby chicken.
Duckin?
Yeah, a duckin. And it's totally adorable, as you'd imagine. And essentially, you have been hatched recently, and you need to save your brothers and sisters who have not been hatched yet. They are scattered around various levels and in kind of dungeon-type scenarios with you know, baddies that you have to get around, and essentially because you are such an, you know, you're so young and you don't really have any skills as far as being able to, you know, punch out these baddies or jump far, you get you know, various tools instead, so you can build bridges and to cross gaps. You get a teleporter, so you can teleport, you know, through walls and that kind of thing. You get guns that do various things as you go through the levels. So essentially, as you go through the levels, you learn new skills, or you get new items to do things with. So you're being constantly introduced to new things, as far as what you can do with it. And the graphics are just absolutely phenomenal. And it's very adorable and very usable. It's just a solid console level game. $5, totally worth it. So that's Tokitori, and you can get that in the App Store right now. And we'll have a review of it up probably tomorrow. And for people wondering, the Terminator review is up also from my last week's pick, and that got, I think, 4.5 out of 5. So you can get that too. And so I think we are done with our picks. Of course, you can go to iPhoneAlley.com for more news, tips, and reviews every day. If you have a tip or a tip that you want to share with us, we can publish on the site. Or if you want us to review a product or an application, you can hit the contact link on the side of the page. And if you'd like to get a list of our iPhone picks or the show notes, you can get those at iPhoneAlley.com/podcast. Of course, if you want to leave feedback, podcast@iPhoneAlley.com. Send us a note. Hate mail, whatever. Compliment Jeff on his new internet pants. Something like that. Jeff, do you wear tactical internet pants? Do you have any?
I don't have the same pants that Andy Anatko has, but I do have a varied collection of tactical style pants.
Yeah, you would, because you used to be a cop. I don't know if we mentioned
the old
that.
Days.
I don't know if we mentioned that on this show or the show that we do after this show, which isn't, it's just kind of recorded and nobody knows about it. But yeah. So Jeff Gamet, he's at the Mac Observer, MacObserver.com, iPodObserver.com, JeffOrama.com, his personal blog, and of course, Twitter.com/JGamet. Thanks for being here, Jeff.
Sure thing. And now that we've finished the show, go ahead and send me the notes so that I know what we're going to talk about.
Okay. Did I not send you the show notes?
No, but that's okay because it was an exciting adventure for me all the way through.
Maybe I can just do that every week. Adam Christensen, did you get the notes?
Yeah, you sent me the show notes. Mm. I feel privileged to know.
Yeah, Adam's the only one who got them. MacCast.com, Twitter.com/MacCast. Thanks for being here, Adam.
Hey, thanks for having me again.
And, of course, the wonderful Ken Ray of the Mac OS Ken podcast at macosken.com and twitter.com/macosken. It's great having you on the show, Ken, and we hope to have you back soon.
Thank you very much, Michael. I appreciate it.
And my Twitter is twitter.com/MichaelJohnston. And with that, another episode of the iPhone Alley podcast is in the can. An iPod.
I'm not sure drinking during a podcast is the best idea.
I think it's a great idea.
I pretty much had been doing it every episode.
Yeah,
so
you said
I don't
that.
Know what took you guys so long.
Yeah. Yeah,
I pretty much have alcohol in front of me for every podcast I do.
We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're gonna use a stylus. No. Yuck. No. Yuck. Yuck. No. Who wants a stylus? You have to get them and put them away and you lose them. Yuck. Yuck.
Made on a Mac, motherfucker.